Joe Manchin has a case of the barnyard epithets.
It's showtime.
It most assuredly is. It is the 15th day of December 2021. There are 16 days remaining in this old year that has had so many surprises, so many changes, and so many disappointments. And, of course, chief among those is, well, Joe Manchin. And in fact, later in the program here, just shortly indeed, we'll be talking about Joe Manchin some more. But every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. That means thanks go out to our 15th day of the month subscribers. That means thanks in particular to Nagla. Thank you, Nagla. Thank you, Robert. Thank you so very kindly for both of you for being our 15th day of the month subscribers. It is so helpful, and we do appreciate everybody. Patreon, PayPal, a la carte, U.S. Postal Service subscribers, everybody who helps keep this program on the air, this long-running experiment in independent, liberal, progressive broadcasting. It ain't easy, but y'all do it. And I cannot thank you enough for it. And having mentioned Joe Manchin, and thank you again to Rico last night for the continuing Fuck Joe Manchin challenge, there's another challenge on the table this evening, and that would be thanks to our dear friend Chris in Germany, who asked earlier. I'd like to make a $200 Fuck Joe Manchin challenge. Would it help? Yes, it would help immensely because our fundraising goal stands at $1,490. What that boils down to is all of this week, and all of Friday last, and all but $10 of this past Thursday. So, if the continuing Fuck Joe Manchin challenge, courtesy of Chris in Germany, is met, we will knock out. We will knock out all of this past Thursday's fundraising, plus Friday on the Front Porch's fundraising, at least $110 of that. So we will have $190 to go for Friday if Chris's continuing Fuck Joe Manchin challenge is met. And Chris asked all the way, could you also throw in a couple of fuck unnamed GQP Congress people too? Yeah, I think we could. I think we will. And they may not be quite as unnamed as perhaps we thought. Because it looks like Jim Jacket Off Jordan was feeling a bit friskily treasonous in the heady days of January the 6th. Oh, hi, I'm Robin. And again, this is the Horn for the 15th day of December 2021. And we'll be talking about Joe Manchin because it looks like Joe Manchin has decided to fuck millions and millions and millions of Americans. So there's certainly nothing wrong in saying fuck Joe Manchin in return. And of course, with everybody who kicks in and contributes to the ongoing Fuck Joe Manchin challenge, courtesy of Chris in Germany, you get a free Fuck Joe Manchin mention here on the program this evening. So if you've ever just really, really felt like saying, and maybe you weren't listening last night or yesterday afternoon, whatever we're calling it, maybe you weren't listening on yesterday's podcast, so you didn't, or maybe you caught up late, so. Maybe you're just feeling that overwhelming sense, that overwhelming desire to bellow to the universe, fuck Joe Manchin. Well, this is your moment. And so if we knock out $200 of fundraising, we will be done with, like I said, all of Thursday and $110 of last Friday's fundraising. And that is profound indeed. So hopefully that will happen sooner rather than later. Just a little bit of news, a little bit of quick news. We're going to be talking to a friend of mine, Troy Miller. with Social Security Works here in a little bit. He'll be ringing in, about 10 minutes from now. So I figured in the interim we would get caught up with stuff. You'll notice that I got home from my doctor's appointment in time to be on the air. Yay! I was very happy about that. And happier still about the news that I got at my follow-up appointment. If you happen to follow me on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, you'll know that I posted a little something. The bottom line to which is what I was hoping would happen today at the doctor's office happened. And my surgeon, who is really a great guy, I think he's going to be a stellar light in the realm of gender confirmation surgery. He's getting more and more great notice, and is a deeply compassionate man and extremely competent in what he does. He gave me the green light. I'm good to travel and just take it as easily as I possibly can. But one of the most encouraging things that I heard today at my appointment was he had a look around and he said that I'm healing exceptionally well. He did get a little kick out of it when I told him about the satanic gnomes that live down there, and they all have voltmeters, and they're just having fun, checking to see which nerves are all hooked up yet. And he said, I don't think we disclosed that, did we? I said, no, you didn't. But it was happy news. I got all kinds of happy news today. One of the things that one misses in a lot of surgical situations is the ability to take a bath. I mean, I've been able to shower and stuff, but oh, Lord, I long for a nice, hot soak in the tub. And he told me I'm good to go there. And the physical therapy rehab stuff that I do three times a day, he said that I'm moving along great there, healing up beautifully. And so it was just a positive experience all the way around. So now we know that I don't have to see him again. For a while, I have to come back down here for an appointment on February the 9th. And then I'll be back down here somewhere around May the 9th. But all told, things are going well. I still have a lot of soreness. He said that's just going to pass in time. And hopefully maybe after Christmas or something, the little satanic gnomes will decide to pack up and go home. Sitting is going to continue to be difficult. But the bottom line here is that we will probably head for Florence in the next. We'll get through this broadcast week tomorrow and Friday on the front porch. I don't know. We may be in Florence by Moore and Monday, which would be really really cool. And then home before New Year's Eve. And I cannot tell you how excited I am by that prospect. Be back in my comfortable, well, not so comfortable, it's kind of freaking cold, but back in my more familiar environs of our little frigid studio. One of the things I am going to have to do when I get home is buy a new broadcast chair. Some of those gaming chairs look really promising. They're really well bolstered, and so that's probably on the agenda. But we're certainly getting the cart way out in front of the horse in that regard. But it was good news. Annette is excited to be heading home. I'm excited to be heading home. I'm excited to see friends and loved ones up in the Shoals where I grew up, and then figure out the best way to. The best way to get home and hopefully do so before too much nastiness meteorological nastiness comes along, because there is, in fact, meteorological nastiness in the offing, especially if you are in the Midwest. I guess this is the same weather system that dumped a bunch of rain in the West and is now working its way across the country. Nothing is beyond the realm of sensationalism, especially in capitalist-driven for-profit media broadcasting. There's a badass storm aimed at the Midwest. It looks ugly. And, of course, they've come up with a name for it. Half of the lower 48, and this is from the Washington Post, half of the lower 48 faces a dangerous weather event Wednesday into the night as an extremely powerful storm system sweeps through the middle of the country, unleashing damaging winds and, in some areas, the potential for tornadoes and out-of-control fires. This, of course, has nothing to do with climate change. Just ask the oil executives and the coal executives. They'll tell you this has absolutely nothing to do with climate change. It has absolutely nothing to do with the fact that conservatives have ignored science and scientists for way too long. Damaging winds and in some areas the potential for tornadoes and out of control fires. The conditions are anticipated to be so severe that the National Weather Service is calling it a historical weather day. There is severe weather risks to 2 million people in Minnesota, Iowa, and Wisconsin. According to the Washington Post story, from New Mexico to Michigan, more than 36 million people are under high wind warnings. The winds, which have already reached 70 to 100 plus miles per hour, are expected to damage structures, topple trees, and cause many thousands of power outages while contributing to hazardous ground and air travel. Denver, Omaha, and Des Moines could see gusts over 60 miles per hour. It is being called, like I said, it's being called a snow-nado. Oh, God, where's the sharks with frickin' laser beams? So, in all the affected areas, hunker down. Stay safe. On a smartphone, you can get an app for weather radio, National Weather Service, weather alerts, that sort of thing. Might be good to have that going and pay attention if it goes off. Oh, by the way, we talked a little bit the other night about how at the candle factory in Mayfield, Kentucky, a number of employees were saying that the bosses, the supervisors, were running around saying, if y'all leave, y'all going to get fired. And having been bruised badly by that information, the company now is going, we never said nothing like that. We wouldn't say nothing like that. No, hell no. Well, there ain't no truth to that whatsoever. So basically they were saying that the woman in her hospital bed was... she should not have believed her lying ears. Oh, and by the way, if you'd like to enhance your listening experience this evening, as is the case every evening, well, run on by HeadOn.live, because over at HeadOn.live, in addition to being the handiest dandiest place you can go to respond to Chris and Germany's continuing Fuck Joe Manchin challenge, as well as fuck a number of anonymous or as yet unnamed GQP treasonous insurrectionists. It's also a great place to go to participate in the merry madcap wacky zany real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn chat room in the hours in which this program is live every Monday through Friday from 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time or Eastern Standard Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. If you go there right now, you will be immediately greeted by Anatole and Jeremy and Otto Deschott and Roger in Oregon and Squeaky and Stockton Larry, and capably moderated by pinch hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all around great guy, Brother Bishop Steve from Georgistan, because this is in fact a prayer meeting Wednesday, but we are temporarily suspending the prayer meeting aspect, so that we can carry on a more important conversation. Hey, Steve. Good to see Steve from Georgia stand there, pinch hit moderating this evening. I really appreciate his presence. As I said earlier, Joe Manchin continues to be a thorn in the side of tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions, of Americans. And, okay, sure. Roger needs the snail mail address. It is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEYWB 25801. Can't wait to see the care package. Probably best to wait until I am home before you send it. And also, you know, the Christmas rush and everything. But I wanted for us to focus this evening, because what he is doing is so just out and out rotten. I wanted to take time to focus further on Joe Manchin, and I'm really, really glad to have my friend Troy Miller join us on the program this evening. Troy, among other things, is the West Virginia organizer for Social Security Works. He's done a lot of good work in the course of his career. He's Social Security Works Special Projects Director, as well as West Virginia organizer. Social Security Works is aimed at improving and expanding Medicare and lowering prescription drug prices. He's also the managing editor of Strong Arm Press, and is the executive producer for The Zero Hour with RJ Esko. Great work all the way around. He's worked as well with The Big Picture with Tom Hartman, the Tom Hartman Program. He's a contributing writer still and editor, working with Tom Hartman. He's a fantastically educated individual. Got a degree from Georgetown University in science, technology, and international affairs. He's a musician, has a small farm, and is looking to help West Virginia find a more progressive way forward, an ambition that I both celebrate and share with Troy. And Troy's on the line with us now. Hey, Troy, how are you?
Hi, Robin. I'm doing well. That's an awful flattering introduction. It's a pleasure to be working alongside you in so many of these different things, and whether we're working directly or just working along the same side of things.
Well, you are working hard indeed, and your focus is you put a lot of time and a lot of energy and a lot of focus on trying to change Joe Manchin's mind or drag him into the light, or however one likes to describe it. Today kind of had to sting a little bit, but yeah, I know.
Kidding about that.
God,
and
bless America,
you know,
really, I mean, yeah.
And it's the, you know, some of the things that are going to be most helpful to West Virginians. You know, the child tax credit is one that, you know, you're looking at 50,000 West Virginia kids that have been lifted out of deep poverty or poverty, and just all of these families. And I've been really focusing the last couple of weeks on the prescription drug prices aspect of Build Back Better, and really trying to make sure that West Virginians have the message and know that, you know, there are provisions in this bill that will lower pharmaceutical drug prices and prescription drug prices. And, you know, again, this is an issue that 90% of everyone across the spectrum supports and wants to see lower drug prices. 96% of basically all voters in the country say they want something done about it.
Yeah,
we get down into the details.
Yeah, the numbers are astonishingly high in terms of support. It's basically everybody in America who doesn't snort Drano.
Yes. Well, and what amazes me is one of the statistics that's been really just rattling around in my head is this 90% of West Virginians are either on a prescription medication or live with someone on a prescription medication. And that's, you know, I feel like everyone can go, oh, yeah, that makes sense. What really has been bothering me is this 10% who aren't on a prescription medication. And I'm sure there are some people who are just very healthy and their household is very healthy and they don't need anything. But I wonder about how many people just aren't accessing the primary medical care because of the cost there too. And because, I mean, we know that a certain, and the politicization of vaccines is a whole nother topic that I don't care to get into terribly, but we know that there's a small portion of people who haven't gotten vaccinated because they don't believe that it's actually going to be free. And they're afraid about whatever the costs are going to be afterwards. When I got my first dose, I was flat the next day. And I was thankful that my employer, Social Security, works and give me the day off and that I work remotely most of the time. I didn't have to be in the office. But how many people, if they needed to take that day off, either would go in sick to their job or lose their job? And I wonder what that percentage of that remaining 10% of people is who are in that sort of category where they're not accessing care because they're afraid of the cost, and rightfully so.
Well, I mean, if you were talking about 10% of people in California or Oregon or Hawaii, maybe that is the percentage of people who are just exceptionally, delightfully, blissfully healthy. But you know the work that I've been involved in for the last couple of decades in West Virginia, the poisoning of West Virginia. I suspect that you are absolutely correct insofar as that's 10% of the West Virginia population that just can't get what they need. That's the 10% of West Virginians who have been basically laid upon the altar of the blood soaked altar of the coal industry and are left to fend for themselves. It's a horrifying prospect because West Virginia is in fact one of the sickest states in the nation. In addition to being one of the oldest populations, but we do have a lot of kids in West Virginia who desperately need things like the funds provided by the child care tax credit. I know Troy that he prattles a lot about, you know, well, I'm worried about inflation and I'm worried about the deficit. But I've been hearing him sing that song for 20 years. It seems to be almost a pat answer. Do you think he's genuine in that, or is he just getting bad information, or
I think there's a little bit of both of those columns. I think that he comes from a generation of Democrats who got really whipped in the 80s and learned that, you know, at the very least, they have to act concerned about the deficit all the time or else they're going to get slammed. I think he hasn't realized that he's going to get called a socialist in 2024, no matter what office he runs for or who he's against. I think that one of the things that I highlighted earlier today on Twitter is that just the sheer number of lobbyists that are hired in all of these different industries. And then, you know, there's this sort of mass misconception about what inflation is right now. You know, people are thinking that it's because we're spending too much money, that we're somehow emulating the Weimar Republic and the Deutschmark is losing its value. And that's not actually what's happening. The U.S. dollar is remaining competitive in the global standard and all of this. What's actually happening is prices are going up, which is all that inflation means, right? That just means prices go up because of corporate greed. And in the healthcare, this is so blatant. It's boggles my mind how this isn't more, how more Democrats aren't constantly talking about this. Even in 2019, during the Trump years, right, when inflation was relatively low, and we're talking about under 2%, I think it's about 1.8% in 2019, the price of prescription drug prices across the board went up by over 10%. And if you take a more narrow metric, and by narrow, I mean 3,400 prescription drugs, and just index those, they went up by more than 17% in the first 6 months of 2019 alone. And this is really, you know, inflation, when prices go up, people get hurt, especially people on fixed incomes, especially seniors. especially people with disabilities. But when it comes, when it's just outright pharmaceutical greed, so they can pay more to their shareholders, pay more to their executives. I believe I saw the CEO of Pfizer made $21 million in the last year. You know, that's where all of the, that's where people are really getting hurt. And they turn around and they hire more and more lobbyists every year to flank people like Joe Manchin, who they know if they just flood the zone with bad information, like you said, then there aren't enough West Virginians who have enough time to call him to contradict what they've been sliding across his office every day for, you know, since 2014, or when I'm drawing a blank exactly when he came in, or 2000, whenever, you can correct me too. But they employ more and more lobbyists every year specifically to target people like Joe Manchin, who they know can be swayed by these weird fiscal arguments that are really all in all just BS. And they know that they have a built-in quote-unquote customer base of patients who need their drugs like insulin, and they can triple the price over 10 years and nobody's going to do anything about it in the U.S. because they have so many lobbyists on the Hill to make sure every time any provision that might cut into their profits at all gets killed under some guise of it'll hurt research and development. And when the House Oversight Committee was supposed to have a hearing last week that Morgantown native type 1 diabetic activist Mindy Salango is supposed to testify at, they moved the hearing, but she spoke to reporters anyway. She talked about how because of the price of insulin in West Virginia, over the course of the pandemic, she had to meet several different times with people in parking lots so that she could provide them with the insulin that they couldn't afford. And she, you know, the description is like they're criminals for being diabetic. It's absolutely obscene. The reality is, what the House Oversight Committee has also found, is that their net revenue is many, 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 many times greater than what they spend on R&D. What they pay out in stock buybacks, or what they use to buy back their stock to increase their valuation, what they use to pay out the dividends so that people will buy more of their stock to increase their valuation, what they pay out to executives wildly dwarfs anything that they do on R&D. And by the way, insulin was a drug that was patented in 1921 and sold for pennies by the people who invented it. It's grotesque.
It's obscene, isn't it, Troy?
It's absolutely. It is. It's Well, I've heard the term barbaric and ransom, and it really does feel like people are being held for ransom for nothing else other than corporate greed.
God knows I don't like to be accused of agreeing with him or anything, but a term that Nitwit Nero used in the Reign of Error recently passed, he referred to some countries, and we know which countries, as shithole countries.
Yeah.
But it seems to me that a country that brutalizes its most fragile citizens, that seems to be a far more effective description of a shithole country, frankly. And the idea,
yeah.
that somebody like Wendy Salango would be in a parking lot saying, "Hey, kid, the first shot's free," which of course she wasn't doing. But I mean, what you said, like some sort of seedy drug dealer. Let me ask you this, Troy. Because I get this question a lot, because people can't help but notice what seem like inherent conflicts of interest on the part of Joe Manchin. You talk about all these pharmaceutical company profits going up and the like. It's not just their shareholders. Well, I mean, it is their shareholders and their executive class. But, you know, there are some people out there who are, oh, I don't know, retired from a pharmaceutical giant who used to be their CEO and who have very nice retirements. And those very nice retirements are largely funded, at least in part, by a very, very nice portfolio of stock from the company. So,
right.
And what, of course, I'm talking about, there's no sense beating around the bush. I'm talking about Joe Manchin's daughter, Heather Bresch. She of the, at least a questionable master's degree from my alma mater, Harvard on the Mon. Do you think, do, I mean, Is it conceivable that Joe would act in the best interests of his own family to the detriment of the people of West Virginia?
I hate to conceive of it, and I certainly don't, you know, I think there's enough people out there accusing him of that type of crooked dealings that I, you know, I'm not, you know, Heather Bresch is a problem. I don't terribly want to participate in it, but what we're looking at is revolving, like what you were describing before is also the problem with our, you know, FDA and everything. And the series Dope Sick, I think it's on Netflix, did a great job of showing this, how they capture our AGs and our, yes, the people who are supposed to be out there protecting us.
Well, I mean,
and
you pay them off handsomely. You know full well the nature,
yeah,
of the Attorney General of the state of West Virginia, Pill Push and Patty Morrissey. That dude came to the Attorney General's office of West Virginia from literally being a lobbyist for the company that dumped millions and millions of hydrocodone pills on the state of West Virginia. It's hard.
Exactly. And
it's hard not to yell duck at something that's walking and quacking like one going down the street.
Well, and that's just one of the saddest things. You know, when you say that this looks like a shithole country, this is, I think people in America, because we've grown up and inundated in this system, especially the generation that might not even remember it quite what was going on before Citizens United, as that gets further and further into our collective, just like what we're immersed in, is that, you know, by all rights, America is a very corrupt country and our states have a ton of corruption. The only thing is we've legalized it by saying that, you know, your money expenditures is actually political speech. And isn't that a nice, neat way of saying that bribing someone is a political act and that's okay, that's speech, so it's protected? Well, yeah, of course a bribe is going to come off as, you know, influencing someone. You can't just call it speech and it's no longer a bribe.
No,
and in fact,
yeah, in fact, when this topic comes up, I always think of, you know, he's certainly gone but not forgotten. He's out there enjoying his retirement somewhere, Justice Anthony Kennedy, who wrote in, what was it, Citizens United, that just because you give a politician a great big pile of money and the politician does exactly what the person who gave them the big pile of money wanted them to do, that does not create the appearance of impropriety and is certainly not bribery. I mean, that was declared
right
by a member of the Supreme Court of the United States, and it certainly seems like a legalistic way of declaring that the naked emperor is outfitted in some of the greatest finery ever created by haute couture.
And one of the things, I mean, this is just a sidestep a little bit, but one of the things I've written about before is I'm not sure how this idea that money is speech can stand while we also have police officers going around and seizing people's money without charging the person with the crime under the guise of civil asset forfeiture. And I really wonder what it takes to transform your money into speech and at what point in the process it becomes speech, right? If I'm driving around $2,000 in my car and the police stop me and for whatever reason decide to take my money and say that it might have been involved with a crime, that's one thing. But what if it was in an envelope that's marked for the Make America Great Super PAC? Isn't that my protected political speech now? Or is that just like, is that too small of a donation for that to count and be protected?
Oh, I know.
It goes back to this disparity of, you know, who has the money and who has the money to keep perpetuating the system. I don't want to think that, I really want to believe the absolute best in Joe Manchin. I want to say that he became a senator so that he could serve the people of West Virginia, not so he could serve his portfolios, not so he could serve Heather Bresch or anyone else who he might be financially, you know, connected with in those soft sort of connections. I really want to believe that he doesn't get the opportunity to hear from West Virginians enough because we have a broken system that allows for there to be two healthcare lobbyists for every member of Congress.
Good God. So doing the math, that two for every, my God.
And I think that includes the insurance companies and the pharma and all that.
Without a doubt. But You know, it's kind of like, and this is prayer, you know, we usually do religious stuff on Wednesdays, Troy, but it's kind of like you asked the question, when does it stop being a bribe and start being speech? It's kind of like, you know, when does the host stop being a rather bland little cracker and turn into the body of Jesus Christ? Well, it's in church terminology, it's when the right words are said over it by the right person, and in political terms, it's when that money goes into, you know, when it passes into the pocket of a politician, suddenly it's not a bribe anymore. It's political speech, or when it goes into a super PAC, or when it goes into a media ad buy or something like that. And it's a kind of alchemy that I find difficult to fathom. And I hate the cynicism inherent in these kind of analyses, insofar as you know, I was young. It was a long time ago now that a political elder said to me, and I think this person has since shuffled off this mortal coil, but he said, you got to understand that no Manchin has ever, A, voted for any Democrat whose name wasn't Manchin, and B, no Manchin has ever done anything good for anybody in West Virginia whose name wasn't Manchin. And if that's true, a state like West Virginia is more screwed than we can even begin to consider. But this transcends the borders of West Virginia. This has extended out to hurting, you know, what he's doing is hurting people in New York. It's hurting people in Massachusetts. It's hurting people in Washington, Oregon, California, Nevada. No sense in going through the whole 50 states, but you get the idea. this is no longer...
Not to mention the District of Columbia and Puerto Rico and all the others.
Right. But this is no longer some sort of local parochial issue. This has become existential. And with that in mind, over at Social Security Works, I had a conversation with Bowser back when I was at Netroots Nation in New Orleans, which I guess was like 2018 or something. Seems a million years ago now.
Right.
But he was there talking about the mission of Social Security Works and the efforts that they were making. I was a little starstruck because I spent a lot of time as a kid watching Sha-na-na. But that work continues with Social Security Works. How is it that Social Security Works decided to fold their work into this work relative to the Build Back Better bill?
Well, so one of the provisions that we're really fighting for is to allow Medicare to negotiate prescription drug prices. And this is one of those things. I mean, in the biggest picture, I would not stop there, but this is what we got. This is what we've negotiated through. And despite what Joe Manchin seems to be thinking that this is some sort of hyper-progressive plot or anything, no, the real progressive plot would be Medicare for all and Medicare negotiating drug prices for everyone. That's how much of the rest of the developed world does it, and it's why they pay lower prices than we do. But this would help, you know, immediately 25% of West Virginians who are on Medicare, one out of four West Virginians. We were talking about children earlier. There are more than 35,000 children being raised in households where their grandparents or one of their grandparents is the primary caregiver. And when I ran the numbers on how many kids under 19 there are in West Virginia, which is somewhere in the 400,000 range, it's about 8% of all kids are being raised by their grandparents in under the age of 19 in the state of West Virginia right now. Many of those grandparents are on Medicare. And speaking of the pharmaceutical greed, you know, a lot of these grandparents have been put in this position because of what Purdue Pharmaceuticals and the Sackler family and plenty of others marketed, mass marketed, and shoved that. It wasn't even like they funneled it in. It was a fire hose of opioid medications into Appalachia that resulted in many people dying. That resulted in many parents dying and many kids being left with their grandparents who have now lost their son or daughter and are raising their second set of kids. And at best, they own their own home. They're on Medicare. They've both paid into Social Security all their lives. Hopefully they have pensions. But you and I know that is farther and farther away from anyone's reality these days. Probably one of the grandparents wasn't in the workforce, didn't get Social Security. We know that women will have overall fewer Social Security payments coming in down later on because they leave the workforce and they're making fewer during their lives. We know all of this. And these people are being crushed by 10% increases on their pharmaceutical drug prices if they're lucky. And this bill would, you know, take a real dent out of that and would take on the pharmaceutical greed that is killing us directly. Now, is it exactly what I would want or what our organization is going to settle for when this gets passed? No. Then it's on to the next fight. Then it's on to making lower prescription pharmaceutical drug prices for everyone in this country, because there is no reason except for corporate greed that people are paying these obscene prices and are choosing not to go to the doctor because they're afraid of what it might cost. So, you know, I think you might be able to hear in my voice, it's really an honor. I'm from Wheeling, West Virginia. I moved to Jefferson County a few years ago after working in D.C. and living in D.C. for about a decade. And I both hate that this is the fight that's bringing everyone to our doorstep and making people look at what we can do here in West Virginia. But it's also an absolute honor to be one of the people who an organization like Social Security Works can go to and go, hey, what can we do to support you? And what can we do to mobilize a ground effort here? So we've been running these billboard trucks around the last couple of weeks.
Yeah. I was going to say, and toward that end, you guys have been, you've been putting your money and your time and your efforts and your energies where your mouth is. You've got a billboard on a truck. You've been holding, you held a rally in Morgantown on the 9th of December. Tomorrow, the billboard truck is moving on to another location. Talk a little bit about that, please.
It's going to be down in Charleston, right outside of Manchin's branch office, right there at the Capitol, at noon for another rally. I wish I had my media advisory in front of me right now that I could tell you who is speaking and what exactly the details are, aside from noon at the Capitol down there outside of Manchin's branch office. But you know, if you can't make it there for noon for the rally and you're listening, just go on down, take a picture of yourself down in front of the billboard truck, tweet it out to him, and then give his office a call. And that's what the billboard truck is saying is, you know, he has said that he is for lower prescription drug prices. It's amazing. Pretty much every politician says that. No politician wants to go out and say they're okay with the status quo. This was something that Trump even ran on, right? He was going to lower everyone's prescription drug prices and replace Obamacare with something better. We're still waiting. But here we have actual plans that have passed through the House and are ready right now to go into effect. Well, within the terms of the law, you and I both know that nothing happens while the ink is still wet, but it's ready to go. And when I was in Morgantown last week for the rally, I won't be able to make it down to Charleston tomorrow, unfortunately, but made it to Morgantown. And we had a great turnout, despite the fact that it was finals week at WVU. And we, you know, a lot of students expressed interest in coming, but couldn't because they had final papers, final projects, and all this. And it made me think, you know, damn it, Joe, this is your final project for the year.
Yes.
Get this done. Get this done. Go have your Christmas dinner. It might be a little awkward with Heather Brash around the table or everything, but it's okay. Or she will be fine. And because I have such contempt for Heather Brash, and I don't know what other word to use, you know, she is a prime example of why Joe Manchin has to vote for this bill and take on the pharmaceutical greed. Because what did Mylan and Viatris and everything do after West Virginians spent their entire lives working at those plants? And they kept on raising prices, ostensibly so they could keep operations here.
See
they packed
later.
Up and they left.
See you later, West Virginia. Bye, hillbillies.
So what the hell were they raising prices for if not to keep Americans employed?
Well, I know, Troy. Yeah. And it seems like every one of these things has a precedent behind it. It reminds me of one of the other pressing issues that West Virginia absolutely has to have relief on is the expansion of preferably fiber optic internet bandwidth. The pandemic has proven that to us in such stark relief. And it was years and years and years ago that there was some $20 million or so, something like that. Of course, that sounds like a drop in the bucket now. But West Virginia got it, and Joe Manchin turned around and gave it to Verizon. And Verizon said, see you later, hillbillies. Bye. And turned over operations to Frontier Communications. And none of that $20 million ever did much of anything except, enrich Verizon. So it almost seems
exactly.
Like it almost seems like there's a pattern and a practice that's emerging here. I understand your frustration.
It's another one of these things where I can't, I am a student of history, as you are, and we started off when I was starting, I think Manchin is of this ilk of Democrats, and, the author Ryan Grimm has a great book about this. We published it over at Strong Arm Press. We've got people from Jesse Jackson to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the birth of a movement and the death of big money or something to that effect. It's a very long title. But he lays out, really how the Democratic Party got away from that sort of rainbow coalition. The big ideas and the sort of great society ideas and really how the politics of the 80s and the major losses in Congress and just the success of the Reagan movement and all this really burned so many Democrats and left us with no real, and I think Jimmy Carter kind of started this too in his attempts to address inflation at that time, which was really, in my opinion, just the petrodollar being a bad thing, right? All of a sudden the price of oil goes up and everything goes up. It's not really, again, the same type of inflation that people think of with the Weimar Republic.
Right.
But what we end up with is all of a sudden we have to work with the private sector on everything, right? Government can't do anything. It's inefficient. And I'm always amazed that the so-called patriots, the people who are most loudly calling themselves patriots, are also the people most loudly besmirching our public servants and saying that the U.S. government can't do anything. Oh yeah, the military might be able to, but the actual bureaucrats and everything—it's mind-boggling the pretzel logic that has to happen
there.
It's
patently untrue because when you take you with Social Security works, you know this. When you take something like the Social Security Administration and you compare its administrative costs with say the administrative cost of any great big financial management company, healthcare company, what the administrative costs of Social Security are infinitesimally smaller than than what gets spent in the private sector. Now you mentioned Jimmy Carter and us being history nerds, pull out the corduroy jackets with the elbow patches and stuff. But the fact of the matter is, I over the course of years, I've come to the conclusion that so much of what is wrong with the United States of America now begins, I mean, you can find all kinds of other precedents, but in earnest, it begins on January the 20th, 1981, with the inauguration of Ronald Reagan, because I always remember Ronald Reagan, before his mind turned to oatmeal, saying, the nine most dangerous words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help. I mean, it would be cruel. I admit it would be cruel, but wouldn't it be just stunning to see footage of Ronald Reagan saying that broadcast on TV stations all over West Tennessee and Southern Illinois and Western Kentucky, you know, just to kind of remind people where that failure came from, and the fact that, you know, there will be help going to these devastated areas, and it's coming from people, and it's coming from a political philosophy that doesn't see government as the problem. But this is what you get over a course of generations of teaching people to think that government is somehow bad, when in fact government is probably one of the biggest net goods in their lives. You know, whether it's trying to have clean drinking water, or, you know, roads that aren't comprised of gravel, that's government. And getting people to understand that it seems to be desperately difficult in this era. We come back to this idea. You've got the billboard being parked in Charleston tomorrow. It's been all over West Virginia. Do you? And obviously, you must think it does, or else you wouldn't be doing this. Is it possible to move Joe Manchin, especially today? Because of course, you know, he's getting a little bit salty and barnyard epithety over the last couple of months. He accused a writer of being bullshit today, and said he wasn't negotiating with the reporters, and said that he didn't have anything to say to them, because apparently word got out that one of the things that is a deal breaker for Joe Manchin is the extension of the child tax credit payments.
Yeah,
under Build Back Better. And now this talk that Chuck Schumer may shelve it in favor of voting rights legislation. And this is certainly not a competition between voting rights legislation and Build Back Better. We need both.
And we need both. Right. Exactly.
And we need a government that can walk and chew gum at the same time and consider two bills. Because this.
Yeah. And it's, I was thinking, it's really frightening. And I, you know, I don't think Manchin intends for this, although again, I can't read what's in his heart, but I just completely lost my train of thought there. He's acting like a king at this point. That's the thing that really bugs me most, is that I hope he's not trying to do this, but it really seems like he is now treating the Congress and everyone else as the person, as all of these people who will bring him ideas, and then he'll sit there with the red pen and say which ones are fantasy, which ones are, you know, or like Santa Claus or something. And it's grotesque to me, the power that he is exerting over this. And if he is really getting sick of all of the media attention and people asking so many damn questions about what he's going to do, then he needs to vote yes on it and let's get it done and over with and move on to the next damn fight here. And because the problem that I have in understanding all of this is that he's negotiated against himself about three times over now, right? These are the compromises. This is what he said was going to be acceptable. And now it's like he's coming back and having his own bipartisan conversation with, you know, the two sides of Joe. And I keep on thinking back on the old Pete Seeger side, which side are you on, boys? And I just keep thinking, it's like, Joe, there are only two sides here, especially when it comes to prescription drug prices. There's the side of pharma greed and their profits, and there's the side of our lives. And it's I can't for the life of me divine what is going through his head and or how entrenched the lobbyists must be around him, or his advisors, or who, I don't know, because I know that if he came and actually talked to a bunch of West Virginians about this, they would agree. Now, the other problem here, of course, is that we have a lot of Fox News and Breitbart and OAN viewers in this state, and all they can talk about is that the IRS is going to be in their bank accounts. And it's, I don't understand, first of all, how that was allowed to be in there and be one of the first things that anyone identified. Because if what anything they're saying there is true about $600 deposits and all that, I can see why everyone would be upset. That's a decent weekend of serving in tips for a server who shouldn't necessarily be investigated by the IRS because they deposited into a checking account on Monday. I can agree with everyone on that. And everyone can agree with, I presume you also, with us, that like Medicare should be able to negotiate drug prices so that we're not getting price gouged, so that we're, you know, not making up all of the pharmaceutical profits for these global corporations. And so I just don't know what is going on with who is in Joe Manchin's ear, if he's listening to his daughter more than other people or what. I really want to believe that he is not that shallow and one-dimensional. But the reality is, as you and I know in West Virginia history, he would be one in a long line of politicians who are exactly that shallow and one-dimensional. I hope he can break that tradition and show like that West Virginia politics is not something that can be connected all the way straight back to the coal barons of the 19th century.
Unfortunately,
and the Wall Street financiers.
But you know what my activist history is on that, and it's kind of hard to turn a blind eye to it. But again, we've talked about patterns emerging. This is I think for all of our own sake, Troy, we need it to be true that he's just getting bad information and acting on it, because see, the same thing happened and continues to happen with the filibuster. Because right. Where the filibuster is concerned, he's talked about how it would destroy the Senate if the filibuster was removed. Well, that means that nobody's ever told him that the House of Representatives had a filibuster in the 19th and 18th centuries, and that the House of Representatives eventually got rid of it because there was no way to get any business done otherwise. And it's not that filibuster's not in the Constitution. There's nothing in there that says there shall be a filibuster. It's not in any wise central to the ability of the Senate to function. So I don't know how you say something that uninformed without somebody having given you that piece of misinformation, or you know, you just kind of came up with it on your own. Either we think that he is changeable, either we think that he is acting on bad information or being poorly informed by whomever, or else it is as venal as what you say, and it is just a matter of people being bought and staying bought. And I don't want that to be our reality. Now, some might accuse me of being a bit right. of a Pollyanna on it, but you've either got to have a reason to engage, or you just walk away and say, oh, well, it's what it's going to be.
Well, and part of it also might be that he is a little Pollyannish about the people he's dealing with across the aisle, you know. And I've said before that if you're compromising with people with no principles constantly, then you are no better than a nihilist, right? That's standing for nothing. That's standing for constantly, like, what's the other side? Oh, you want to... I came up with so many grotesque things, but I'm going to avoid any of the really bad analogies and say, you know, oh, you want to have everyone who's ever smoked cannabis imprisoned completely for the rest of their lives and maybe thrown onto a desert island. And these people want to legalize it and tax it. So let's find some middle ground. That's not a position. If you're talking about whether to cede Czechoslovakia or not, you cannot find a compromise position there.
No, it's just like so much of both siderism that infects our media. There is not an opposite side to the COVID-19 vaccine saves lives. You know, you cannot have a meaningful debate between the COVID-19 vaccine saves lives and no, it makes keys stick to your neck because you're magnetic now and not quite human.
Right. And I think there is a problem, and I don't want to say every Republican is this way, but there is a problem with a lot of people who are so-called conservatives, and they're not. They're bad faith dealers who want to destroy the U.S. government, and they're hiding under this name of conservatism because there is somewhat of an esteemed tradition. If we had a real political spectrum in this country that was like resembling anything in the from 100 years ago or many other places in the world, I would be an Eisenhower Republican. the reality is we don't have that because we have bad faith dealers on the other side who aren't conservatives. They are reactionaries and radicals. And this is the second time this week I'm talking about this, but my wife and I watched the last season of The Crown a while ago, and one of the scenes that with Gillian Anderson as Margaret Thatcher is absolutely incredible. But one of the scenes that really stood out to me, and this is, you know, actual history dramatized, is her standing there and saying, well, we need to go further in austerity. We need to take away all of these benefits and all of this. People need to learn how to stand up on their own. And her conservative cabinet is sitting there aghast going, well, we don't believe that's all very radical, fast action. We believe in like slow change deliberately and all this. That's what the hell conservative movement used to be. And of course, they were slowballing things like civil rights and still are, but they weren't retrograde in the same way. And that's what I find offensive now when Joe Manchin is talking about how he needs to negotiate with the conservatives on the other side of the aisle, is he's not negotiating with the conservatives on the other side of the aisle.
He is the conservative
on this side of the aisle, and he's negotiating with the radicals.
Well, and exactly, and with that in mind, you feel free to disagree with me, but does it drive you a little bit bananas, Troy, that every blessed time he's referred to in the for-profit media, he is referred to as West Virginia centrist Joe Manchin? There's nothing centrist about him, is there? I can't find it. I've been looking for a long time.
Again, only in this world where center means that you're willing to negotiate with the far right and the radical reactionaries over there, and you're willing to dismiss the what I would call, again, reasonable progressives. We're not talking about Eugene Debs' policies here. We're talking about Dwight Eisenhower's policies here.
It's crazy making. There's nobody hollering to the ramparts, and you know the only thing you have to lose is your chains. There's nobody out there singing the Internationale. I just happened to tune into C-SPAN the other night when they were staying, when the house was staying up late, and there was some, you know, coot from Texas saying, well, this would replace the socialist tendency, the socialist policies of the Democrat Party, all of which was enough to make me eat dirt and run rabbits, you know, the whole Democrat Party thing. But now they just they throw socialist in as an adjective, like somebody else might put a flourish under their signature, and it has no real meaning. It's the same with critical race theory; it doesn't have any meaning. It is a word, and our side has done it too. I caught some grief in years past over the fact that, and I kind of turned it into a running joke. That, you know, anybody who ever delivered a cold cup of coffee to Jill Stein was a neoliberal establishment shill, when it's just not true. But we managed to suck all the meaning out of neoliberal when it's a very important word. And right. You know, the same thing goes for socialism. I mean, it's a thing, but it's not the thing that the Republicans think it is, and it's certainly not the thing that keeps Emery and Marvelline sitting there in their matching Barca loungers at the Ballerina Swan Lake Trailer Court and Country Club up at night. And it's not being taught in schools, and it's not the concept that's causing hardworking teachers to have their freaking lives threatened. And little programs like this, you know, we try to talk about this and try to extend the idea so that people can push back against it. But, you know, you tune into something like, Meet the Press. And their framing is constantly coming from the right so that actual facts never get they never even get a fair hearing. I refer to you probably haven't heard, but you know, I wake up in the morning, and just because entertainment value, I turn on the MSNBC morning program. I refer to it as my filthy morning habit. And this morning I heard that former congressman from Florida bemoaning the fact that the sports stadiums in New York City are full and the movie theaters are full and the restaurants are full, but the office towers are empty. Why won't people go to work? And you know, his answer was, well, you know, because lazy. When in fact, that is the shallowest kind of answer. It's a discussion. It's discussion that deserves so much more nuance and so much more depth.
And that what's incredible to me is it goes back to the same thing we were talking about earlier. The loudest people who are calling themselves patriots are also the loudest people telling you that the American government can't do anything right and we need to gut it and blah, blah, blah. And the loudest people who are saying that, like, we're the greatest country in the world and anyone who doesn't agree with that can get out are also looking around and going, wow, every one of my neighbors is a lazy bones who doesn't want to work. And that's why all these restaurants are empty. And it's like, how can you square that? How can we be the greatest country on earth and also all of your neighbors be just so lazy that you can't, that the restaurant isn't open on the day you want to go in? You can't have it both ways. They deserve to be paid more. Nobody has a right to have a restaurant.
But every every time some union goes on strike, the jerk next door says, well, I don't know why they deserve $30 an hour. I don't make $30 an hour. Well, that's because you don't understand the concept of solidarity, brother.
Right.
You know, as liberals and progressives, we want people making living wages. We want a viable middle class. There's not a Republican argument being made out there from an economic standpoint that leads to a viable middle class. It leads to the pauperization of America and something that my father was teaching me about when I was just a little kid, namely that Republicans want a two-class society, the very rich and the very poor. And they're freaking winning, Troy.
Yeah. I mean, and once again, you know, I go back to that. We're looking at inflation and people are upset about this, but they're directing it the wrong place again, because people don't have a great sense of economics. And unfortunately, even the economics that's taught in our, if people have taken economics, so much of it is bought. You make so many assumptions at the very beginning, such as profits are inherently good, rather than, you know, an actual critique of the capitalist system would say, profits are inefficient. For there should be zero profits because ultimately the market should be determining that those profits are getting reinvested or spent on something else because it's a perfectly efficient system. Profits are nothing but waste as far as the hyper-capitalist analysis is concerned, but we can't get there, right? We have to go, well, they have to deliver shareholders to their profits. So that's the main part of a corporation. And that's somehow part of our main economic thinking, even though that's a business assertion, not an economic assertion.
Precisely.
And it also goes to find me a newspaper today that has a labor section, but yeah, they all have business sections. And we're just caught in this hyper-capitalist mindset that where any time we talk about, like, well, let's tax the people who are making basically highway robbery here. You know, Alex Mooney, my congressman over here, he shared, and I'm looking forward to the knives out between him and McKinley. He's already pulled out 4 weeks of attack ads for the next month against McKinley for not being Trump enough. But all that aside, both of them are running against Biden inflation, right? And this whole idea that the beef you're going to have for Christmas is going to cost 20% more than it did last year because we have spent all this money on the American Rescue Plan. And it's like total bullshit because it doesn't take 20 seconds to be able to Google and go, well, Meatpacker net revenue is up 300% over the year. So it seems to me that they can cut out inflation completely, lower their prices, and still be up a significant amount on their net revenue. But we can't quite get there because, you know, unfortunately, so many Americans are being kept so desperate, and especially here in West Virginia, that they see 20% up on beef prices, they get their grocery bill, and they're upset. And they know that one of the things that changed is the blue guy is in there versus the red guy. Never mind that if there is attributed inflation to be had from national federal policy, it is coming from the Trump tax scam in 2017, where they allowed them to hoover up even more money. And then the pandemic gave them all the guys. One of my other hats that I wear is also as the executive producer for Off Kilter with Rebecca Vallis. And last week we had one of the guests on the program is Matt Stoller, who discussed how, you know, Kroger's, their executives were talking to investors last year about how a little bit of inflation is good for them because they can raise prices and blame it on inflation, and they can raise prices 5-6% and nobody will notice. And, you know, so this is the type of planning that they are doing at the corporate greed level. And
if they pay attention, you know, if we pay attention, they'll tell us. And just
exactly
to sort of, just to sort of loop things back to build back better. And your work with Social Security works, you know, the same thing. Again, we're back to pharmaceutical prices. These people know what they're doing. They're not babes in the woods who are simply being buffeted by some sort of economic ill wind. The pharmaceutical prices don't go up because there's a bunch of shipping container ships off of LA that aren't being unloaded. You know, those things are loaded with mostly crap. That's probably not entirely true, but close enough. This is market manipulation. This is why we have a freaking Sherman Act.
Right.
Not that we ever use it.
Right. Again, we have Robert Bork and Ronald Reagan and these folks to thank for that and setting the precedent for, well, you know, the logic being, of course, that as long as a monopoly is forming and they say that they'll cause prices to go down for consumers, that never happens, but they say that, then it's not an actual merger that we should be concerned about. That's the whole, like, it's the consumer welfare logic of antitrust right now. And it's insane because, you know, how they make, if they do lower prices for any amount of time, the way they do it is by firing American workers, streamlining operations, streamlining being code for making worse, and lobbying against regulations that they see prohibitively expensive, which, by the way, is every regulation, because they would rather be able to hire children of any age and dump their poisons in any waterway they want and make more money. But, you know, then they could pass on the savings to consumers, we're supposed to believe. It's mind-boggling. At that House Oversight Committee press or conference I referred to earlier, one of the slides they presented was an email from, I believe it was a guy at Eli at Lilly, talking about how all I want for Christmas is that for Eli at Lilly and Novo Nordisk, and the third one I can never remember, to raise their insulin prices in lockstep. And sure enough, because they do it every damn year, that's what they did. There is, again, no reason for insulin prices to be going up in lockstep across three manufacturers every year. That has nothing to do with research and development. That has everything to do with a cartel that needs to be broken up and probably charged with RICO crimes.
Exactly. Sherman Act, because, just to give you a little bit of a giggle, because I don't know if you get them, but I get the Save America burblings of Nitwit Nero on a daily basis. we were talking about the Senate earlier.
The threatening emails where they give you the abusive relationship between the family members asking you for money. That's what they send me in my email.
Yeah, I get those too. But these are direct nuggets of not wisdom from Nitwit Nero himself. For instance, just moments ago, I got Mitch McConnell is giving away the infrastructure bill. He's so clever. Infrastructure bill. You get it? The infrastructure bill will soon be giving away the Build Back Worse bill, which will change the very fabric of our society. This was all made possible by the 2-month extension he gave the Democrats, the separation of the two bills, and most importantly, his lack of courage in playing the debt ceiling card. He's grabbed defeat from the jaws of victory. How this guy can stay as leader is beyond comprehension. This is coming not only from me, but from virtually everyone in the Republican Party. He is a disaster and should be replaced as leader ASAP. And this is all because Mitch McConnell stopped saying it, didn't even have any, wouldn't even have any contact with him fairly shortly after the shit hit the fan in the wake of the election. And he's scared. But the bottom line here, though, is that I mentioned this last night on the program, there's no Republican Party anymore. Troy, let's stop kidding ourselves. There's the maggot party, you know, the Make America Great Again Trump supporter party. And the Republic, whatever you, the Republican Party used to be, is no more. It is dead and gone. And this is, you know, this is what it gets replaced with. And I, you know, there's data out there about, because you know, here we are coming up on a midterm election, and oh my God, we're getting the polling data about disaffected Democrats and Democrats who are going to stay home, and the media just it's media catnip, and they can't resist it because it makes it easier to sell some sort of nose-to-nose horse race. When you know, if people stay home, we're screwed. I mean, the future that's being envisioned by all these media analysts are saying, the Republicans are just going to run away with it, is dystopian in the extreme.
Absolutely. And, you know, the media is, I'm going to sound a little bit like Bernie Sanders here. I see that as a compliment for myself, but there's two problems here, right? We talked about Meet the Press and this both sidesism and everything, right? And why do they do that? Because they need to be nice to the Republicans, so the Republicans will keep on showing up on their shows. And if they ask a tough question, then Mitch McConnell won't come on anymore. And then they just have to talk to the Democrats, and they can't. They won't do that. The other aspect of this is, why the hell isn't this? Why aren't lower pharmaceutical drug prices and what's actually in the Build Back Better bill on CNN or MSNBC? Well, I don't know. This segment brought to you by Pfizer. I'm just thinking that there is an incentive there also on the part of the media to not be doing their damn job. And it's not their job to sell the bill for Joe Biden's behalf, but it is at least their job to not be led around by the nose by exactly what you said. I consider them bad faith, den of thieves dealers here. And I think, among the electorate in the Republican Party, I think there's a lot of people who can be won over if we can get our messages to them. Among the leadership and the lobbyists and the paymasters and all that, I think we basically have the fascists who are, you know, all good with Mago Mussolini or whatever you want to call him, and the more frighteningly, what's that guy's name out there in North Dakota or wherever, the Tom... I'm drawing a blank on his name, the former Navy SEAL and everything. But these people who are really, Tom Cotton, Arkansas, thank you. Sorry. Brain fart on multiple levels there. But like really just like they are programmatic, and they actually, what frightens me about them, about some of them, Josh Hawley is another one who frightens me, is they actually seem to have programmatic things. And this is the thing that the fascists and the Nazis did in Italy and in Germany to great effect. And there's a reason why people, it's one of these things where I'm really glad we don't have a parliamentary system in the United States, because there are enough people who are fervently in support of that hard right reactionary radical programming, as there basically were at the time in the Weimar Republic in Germany. You're looking at about 30%, 30%.
Right. And that's all
that
it takes.
Actually managed to seize the Bundestag.
We've talked about this on this program over and over again. You do not have to have a majority to seize power. All you need is a motivated, noisy plurality. Tops. By the way, you're getting high praise.
And,
you're getting high praise from one of our dear friends, Steve from Georgistan. He said, "Great show, great guest." Washington Journal was a hot mess this morning. These maggots listen to nothing but Fox News. Fox News didn't carry anything related to the Mark Meadows treason. Conclusively, in their minds, it didn't happen, and anything being reported about it elsewhere is fake news. So Fox News is in a race to the bottom against ONAN, the network that spills its news upon the ground, and Newsmuck. There's a reason Chris Wallace bailed on Sunday. We're in a very dangerous place. And Steve says, thanks much for bringing Troy on. Like you, he's spot on. So thank you very kindly for adding to the conversation. And Steve, you know, and that is, a Washington Journal is a good, if you want a barometer relating to that noisy plurality. You can find it there every morning, and I generally don't watch it without at least a fifth of you know, old Panther piss and a swirly straw, because it's madness. It is absolute madness. Going back to insulin prices for a second, Troy, Jeremy says, yeah, they're too high, yet there are new forms being made which work differently with release times and forms of diabetes recognized here, pre-diabetic, type 1, type 2. So there's further work going into the insulin field, so I understand some of the cost, but when it's just plain generic insulin, extreme price does seem cruel.
Yes, exactly. I mean, and, you know, that is, there, it's this, but there's also all of this, right, as almost as they spend way more on advertising these new things than they do on actually researching and developing them. And then we give them a monopoly in the form of patents. And then that gives them, and what they'll do is frequently, and I can't speak to insulin in particular, but frequently what they'll do as the manufacturers is, oh, our patent is up. Well, we will modify some inactive part of this.
Mm-hmm.
And ideally, right, that's come up with something and say, this will last longer.
Yeah, that's Prilosec and Nexium. They turned a molecule sideways.
Exactly. And now they get a monopoly again for the next 7 or 14 years or whatever the gimmick is right now. And we're constantly fighting to shorten that window, and they're constantly fighting to expand it because, well, what is it? It's literally the U.S. government, the same U.S. government that everyone on the right loves to hate, is protecting their profits in the form of holding these patents. Now, one of the proposals that did not make it into this Build Back Better Act, but has been on has been in proposals before and we're going to continue to fight for, is to allow the U.S. government to actually seize those patents when a company raises its, and you'd have to index, right, and figure out exactly what the threshold is, which is too much, but say 4 times the rate of inflation, you know, and they do that 2 years consecutively. Well, guess what? You don't get the next 5 years, and we'll produce generics just the same. Which, by the way, we should probably be doing as a country anyway, because I think everyone can agree that it's not necessarily either efficient in any sort of way or great when the majority of our generics are being produced in countries like India or China or anywhere else.
Precisely.
Right? We should be manufacturing this in-house. We used to at the Mylan and Viatris plant. And what is again, how were we paid back? With our lives of work with them and paying the prices they demanded, well, they moved operations. See you next Tuesday.
Let me ask you a question, Troy. Going back to the whole issue of price negotiation relative to Medicare, that's Medicare. That's 65 and up, and a few other people, generally speaking. Is there anything out there relative to Medicaid? Because, you know, so many people, like in West Virginia, so many people, their access to pharmaceuticals is controlled by their access to Medicaid.
Right.
Is there any movement afoot, or because they're administered by the states, is that impossible to impose?
And there's also, right, it's a more difficult system because it is set up by the states. And my understanding is that there also already are copay caps on many of the prescription drugs that are being addressed here. So it's a slightly different animal that can't be addressed as cleanly. And again, this is why I kind of started off on your program saying that in my ideal and what I will continue to fight for in my capacity as a security works and individually, should I ever leave, which I don't intend on anytime soon, is for Medicare for all, so that we can have,
precisely,
you know, a single payer system that then the U.S. government and the full faith and power of the U.S. government are negotiating with these corporations. And that's one of the things that I don't think really has sunk in with a lot of people. It does sink in when you talk to them, but, you know, conservatives are just, and I love it because, well, I don't love it. I love it in the grotesquery way, but, you know, Josh Hawley has his book out about big tech and all this. And I've read it in the course of research. And I was astounded at how actually cogent and coherent so much of the history and his points are about corporations and monopoly and all this. And then he just calls them like, he'll be like the woke Facebook place. And that's how they do it. They're, you know, we're talking about mega corporations that are by definition conservative, right? Their whole thing is to generate profits within the market system and to try to make as much of a monopoly as possible. That's their thing. They don't care about anything else. But, you know, Facebook is woke because they censored Donald Trump or whatever. No, 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 no. The only entity that can take these places on is the U.S. government, right? Somehow we can understand this, often misguidedly, and think that we can do this. You know, the U.S. military is the only thing that can defend around the world. But we don't think about, like, the U.S. government is the only thing that can protect Americans from corporate predators and multinational corporate predators at that. Not to come off as any sort of nationalist or anything like that, but that is a problem when you have corporations with no actual place, no flag that they're flying, so to speak, just going around and basically, again, holding people for ransom. And who can they hold the most for ransom? The U.S. government, because of the built-in corruption in our system, because of rulings like Citizens United and Buckley v. Vallejo before that.
It always comes back to it all, doesn't it? To those horrible.
Sure does to me. The money in politics is a root of a lot of the ills in our, that afflict our country right now, and a lot of the reason why we can't fix the things that people overwhelmingly demand, like this. 96% of Americans want lower drug prices, and we can't address it because of the corporate greed and the corporate capture that has been entrenched in our system because of bad Supreme Court rulings that stand as precedent still.
Let me ask you this relative to Social Security Works overall work. We spent a lot of time, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Campaign, over the course of the last, 9 years, not so much in the last couple, but we spent a lot of time working in the halls of Congress, knocking on doors, talking to members of the House and Senate. Have y'all been with the pandemic? Have y'all been able to send teams into the House and Senate office buildings to talk face to face with legislative aides and liaisons and fellow and fellowship holders and whatnot? Have you been able to do that?
Less than we'd like to. we really do believe in sending people directly to the doors of places, and it's just that it's been. It's more difficult to get people into D.C. And, you know, hell, it's more difficult to try to find any of the electeds where they are. The pandemic has definitely created some novel issues in that way. But people are still making it there. And it's not just us. We're part of a much larger coalition, Patients for Affordable Drugs Now, Lower Drug Prices Now. The drug prices are too high. The whole group of them, Just Care USA, all of these organizations are doing great work and alongside of us. We're a pretty feisty little organization that can, that works best in these coalition settings and really mobilizing people and getting those words out and getting people connected with their representatives. But, you know, it's not like it was in 2000, back in 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, even 19, when we could get down there, live stream a whole bunch of people outside of someone's office and really make it heard. On the other hand, the other side hasn't been able to get much done anyway. And especially since the January 6th, insurrection, coup, whatever you want to call it,
anything but riot.
Try not to. That would be the nice media way to refer to it too, is or protest or something like that. Now, ever since then, it's difficult to get down to the hill and to get in touch with people, and unfortunately, that only benefits the other side.
Right, because the people.
Right.
The people
what's the best way to collapse our democracy into an oligarchy than to insulate our lawmakers away from the people who elected them?
Right.
What a great knock-on effect for them.
Right. And since we've been talking about Joe Manchin, you know, one of the things he said, well, I'm not hearing from anybody in West Virginia saying they want fill in the blank. and that's part and parcel of what you're doing. Let me ask you this. Will there be any live streaming tomorrow or anything like that?
I wish I had more information right off the top of my head when there's that final hours of planning. And I won't be there, unfortunately, in person, so I can't speak to what may or may not happen exactly. We did live stream the Morgantown rally. We have every intent to live stream whatever happens in Charleston, but it's hard for me to make a promise. Like,
well, listen, yeah, I understand. Well, if in the course of the final minutes of planning or whatever, it turns out that there's going to be a live stream link, would you please message me so that I can put it out on social media and let people at least be there remotely? I'd really appreciate it.
It'd be my absolute honor to
you've given me a lot of time this evening, and I thank you so, so very much. And please know, you're welcome here anytime you get a bee under your bot under or a burr under your saddle, because we had a great conversation standing outside of the convention hall in Philadelphia a couple of years ago. We've had some good conversations off air over the years, and anytime you feel like you'd like to have an on-air conversation, just holler, and the door is always open.
Well, thank you so much, Robin. I appreciate it so much. And, I had such a great time meeting you in Philadelphia a couple years ago, and I've been following your work and following you and stalking you on social media for years before then. So, it's an honor to be in this fight with you, and truly am humbled with all the kind words kind words and descriptions, and your audience is I'm honored to be here speaking with them and with you, and I will definitely be in touch for anyone in your audience who wants to check out other of my work. I have an op-ed that's going to be in the print edition of the Charleston Gazette Mail tomorrow. Yes. On this issue of lower prescription drug prices. I also have a Substack, which is completely free at BlueRidgeBreakdown.substack.com. I wish I were publishing there more often. It seems to be kind of fits and spurts throughout the year as different things demand my time, but everything is completely free up there. You go up there and put your email in if you want. You'll get everything in your inbox as it comes out. Otherwise, just check it out periodically and see if there's anything new. And once again, Robin, thank you so much for having me on the program to discuss this important issue.
Thank you
so much for everything you do.
Well, thank you. And as one West Virginian to another, we need more Troys, not less. So it is a pleasure and an honor to be in the struggle with you. And I hope I'm looking now at maybe being back in West Virginia, hopefully before New Year's, as my recuperation continues, and I hope our paths cross and we can collaborate and do some good work.
Likewise, thank you so much, and I know it's prayer meeting Wednesday, so I'll just end with amen to all of that.
Amen, 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 and all God's children said amen, and the happiest of holidays to you, Troy. You take care.
Thank you so much, and you too, and safe travels.
All right, thank you. Bye now. And that's my friend Troy Miller from Social Security Works. Tomorrow, the Social Security Works billboard truck will be in Charleston trying to bring some informational pressure to bear on Joe Manchin. And if I were home, I would be there. I hope there will be a good number of people that show up and make things make it abundantly clear that people are really, really wanting Joe Manchin to do the right thing, and by the right thing, I mean not the thing he's doing right now. So that's where my heart is. And by the way, Flavio just pointed out a moment ago that as he's listening, it's a balmy 65 degrees in La Crosse, Wisconsin. Hint, it's not normal for it to be a balmy 65 degrees in the middle of December in southwest Wisconsin. High wind warning has gone into effect from 6 p.m. Wednesday until 6 a.m. Central Standard Time Thursday. That's the perfect weather for tornadic activity. I'm truly scared, Flavio says. La Crosse isn't tornado country, But this warm weather in December and what happened in Kentucky and southern Illinois is worrisome. There's a Spanish proverb that goes something like, when you see your neighbor's beard being shorn, start soaking yours. Yeah, you've got a right to be. And so what you have to do, if there's any potential for that kind of threat to come your way, is you've got to know where to go and where the safest, and that, of course, is an extremely relative term, where the safest place to take shelter is. So please do that, Flavio. I really hope you will. And thank you very kindly to pinch hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all around great guy, Brother Bishop Steve, and Ms. Karen down in Georgistan. We are $25 into the continuing Fuck Joe Manchin challenge. There's $175 remaining, and that would be wonderful if we could do that, because we'd knock out all of this past Thursday and part of last Friday's fundraising goal, and finally maybe be getting close to starting to catch up with this week. And oh my God, I was beginning to worry a little bit, frankly, but it looks like Scott in San Diego's with us. Are you there, Scott?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm here, upright and above ground, which is never a bad thing to be.
No, every day above the dirt is a good one.
Yeah, let's see here. God damn it, I just had a brain fart is what I did. Oh, I know, since it's the program formerly known as Prayer Meeting Wednesday, I figured I would do my greatest comeback since Lazarus trick for the edification and entertainment of the Horn people.
You know, it's funny, in the scriptures it says Lazarus come forth. I wonder who he called out first, second, and third.
Well, that's depends on the translation. If you're reading the Douay Bible with the footnotes and the columns of Greek and Aramaic and Hebrew, all will become known. So anyway, reports of my having fallen off the planet are totally unfounded. I am still here. I've just been in not a funk, but you know how you get reflective about the course of your life and the way things are going and stuff? Well, I have been that way for a while, and I guess it's this fucking pandemic, which doesn't seem to ever end, that's bringing it about. And I figured just for variety, I was going to do a change up in my routine. And that's, you know, a part of my absence is due to that. I don't know. It seems the longer this goes on, the more.
So did you start sleeping at night instead of the daytime? I mean,
No, God, Robin, I cannot tell you how fucked up my already fucked up sleep schedule has become. To tell you the truth, I haven't slept in my bed for probably 3 or 4 nights or days or whichever it is. I'll sit here and be watching something on TV with the recliner in the back position, and I'll zonk out for 3, 4, 5 hours and then wake up, TV's still on. You know, it's at least when I had the bird and the cat, they would let me know when I would do that and say, what the fuck? Go to bed, stupid.
You know what you need? You know what you need? A snake.
A snake, yeah.
A pet snake.
That's what I need.
You'll never do that thing again with a pet snake on the loose.
Yeah. But then, you know, when it comes time to walk it, they
oh, that's quality. That's why I've missed you.
They wriggle up the leash, and then they bite you, and then the walk is over. Then the ambulance comes.
So, well, I was thinking more like a ball python, but, you know.
Let me share some good news with you.
Please do.
And I'll tell you something. I don't know if you've ever seen this documentary, but once I get my copy, I may have a copy coming your way. PBS ran it in, I think, 1991. It was a multiple-part series called Making Sense of the 60s. And it was produced and directed by a guy named David Hoffman, who's a documentarian. And for anybody who wasn't around in the 60s, the only way to really get a full sense of it without ever having been there is to watch this documentary series, Making Sense of the 60s. My copy of it is on the VHS tape that I recorded when it aired on the PBS station wherever I was living in 1991. And I even contacted the guy to see if it was ever going to come out on DVD. And he would send me a copy if I paid the institutional price. And you'd have to be in an institution. You'd have to be that crazy to pay the price that that libraries and schools pay. And it wasn't generally available except to libraries and schools. So for years, all I had was my own VHS off-the-air copy. Well, lo and behold, I did some Googling around recently and found it on DVD. And I don't know if it's a pirate copy, and I'm not asking too many questions, but I placed my order the other day, and it should be here about the first part of the coming week.
Oh, my goodness.
And I am so happy. But I recommend it to anyone who's never seen it, especially those who were not around in the scintillating 60s. It's called Making Sense of the 60s. It's on DVD for like $19.96 or something, very reasonably priced. And I've ordered other stuff from this company in the past, so I know they're a reputable firm. I'm trying to think of the name of the firm, and I'm having yet another of my brain farts. It's called Earth Station One. Numeral one, earthstation1.com, and just key in there, Making Sense of the 60s, and you too can have your very own copy. But don't you get one.
How many hours is it, Scott?
Oh, God. It's got about six or seven parts, so it's got to be at least that much in hours. It's been a while since I watched it. But I have a niece who, you know, every time we talk, I mention the documentary and have never been able to make her a VHS copy. That's assuming my VHS copy has still got oxide in all the right places, you know. You know how that works. Old tape. But, yeah, it's a good 6 hours, 5 or 6 hours. Did I lose you? Or you?
No, I'm right here. I had never heard of that particular series. And you said it was produced when?
It aired on PBS in 1991. And the director, producer, whatever, is David Hoffman. And he's done some other documentaries, and you can probably find them on YouTube. As a matter of fact, a lot of the segments, if not the whole thing, is finally on YouTube. But I wish it had been available through home video and not just through educational institutions and libraries, because it really sums up that era beautifully. And we learn from the past.
I'd be very curious in that regard.
Go ahead.
I was going to mention to you, I was actually thinking of you the other day. Because
was it pleasant thought?
Yes, it was. I thought, well, my goodness gracious, Scott would be all over this like a duck on a June bug. I sat down because there are moments in the day when I have considerable time that I just spend sort of reclining and watching things. I watched the CNN series, The History of Comedy.
Oh, isn't that good?
Oh, it was very good, and I was surprised how much they got out of it, because they, it was like one 10-segment season and then a second 5-segment season.
Oh yeah, it's on one of the streaming services. I forget which one.
I found it on HBO Max.
Yeah. Okay. Well, then check that out if folks haven't watched it, especially if they like humor and comedy and stuff. Yeah, I enjoyed that. It's been a couple of years since it first aired, but comedians, I've always had a special place for comedians.
Well, I mean, you know, what did John Barrymore say? Dying's easy, comedy's hard.
Yes, and then he had a drink and fell over. as I recall. It's been a while since I've read up on old John Barrymore, the profile.
Well, I cannot tell you how tickled I am to hear from you.
Well, tickling is a good thing.
Especially, you know, we had some pretty heady subject matter there for the first hour and a half of the program. And
I enjoyed hearing that.
Troy is such a smart guy.
You know, the thing about West Virginia and some of these other states, you look at California, particularly Orange County, California. Once upon a time, if you were a Democrat, you couldn't get elected to the House of Representatives. And I don't know how it is now, but a couple of years ago, news was made that there were no longer any House members, U.S. House members, elected in Orange County.
Well, you know, my little dream is to change the name of Orange County, California, to Mississippi County, California.
Why? Mississippi County?
Yeah, I mean, Orange County is California's answer to Alabama or Mississippi or, yeah, just in terms of the political concern, because, who was the one member of the House who got ran, she got ran out because she was blackmailed over a, you know, it wasn't even something she did wrong. Her ex-husband
Jendrette?
No. I mean, just in the last couple of years, I think she was from Orange County.
The only Orange County politician.
Fought a close-fought, a hard-fought, close campaign, and wound up resigning from the House shortly after this House came in, or this Congress came in.
I remember that. Yeah. I can't think of her name. The only Orange County Congress critter that I remember was B-52 Bob Dornan.
Oh, Lord, yes.
Who just a reprehensible sort of chap. He'd fit right in with this current crop of Republicans. But some lady, I think, a person of color, as I recall, or an ethnic person of some sort, got his seat. That's what I'm saying as an exercise in hope and moving forward for West Virginia and these other states. Don't buy into the notion that it's impossible for your place to change, because if you had told anybody 20 years ago that in 20 years Orange County wouldn't have any U.S. House members who were Republicans, they would have fitted you for one of those jackets that buckles in the back.
Yeah, truth. Yeah.
So, I mean, and I know West Virginia is a hard case, because the madness is entrenched. There's something in the water, Robin, so you better get your pH kit and test that shit and make sure that you're not drinking any of it, or boil it before you drink it.
Well, that's generally what we do. We've got distilled water here and other bottled water here, so at least we're only drinking the plastic poisons.
All is not lost.
No, it isn't, and your point is well taken, and it's what I was talking to Troy about. I'm so sick of hearing these geniuses of the for-profit media, well, you know, it's all over for the Democrats. You know, they should probably just leave, and leave and let the Republicans have everything.
I mean, isn't it amazing that they've got crystal balls or something that they can tell us what's going to happen in the midterm?
You know, those things are fragile.
Yes, I know. Don't bag them together, boys and girls. Because,
wait a minute. Don't bag them together. Wait, I think we're in the gutter. Yay.
Yeah, don't bowl with them either. I mean, yes.
The thing is, I mean, for instance, we're finding out now that some of those names that in the January 6th commission has run across of members of Congress who are having a fit on January 6th and texting Mark Meadows for all they were worth. Well, there he is, our favorite Republican, Jim Jacket Off Jordan, who was actually making an argument to Meadows for the coup.
Oh, I'm sure.
He wrote, on January 6, 2021, Vice President Mike Pence, as President of the Senate, should call out all the electoral votes that he believes are unconstitutional as no electoral votes at all. He just wanted to nullify the votes of millions and millions of Americans. Now, this is a, I mean, how is that not running an running a coup?
Well, the thing that I think we're going to find out is the riotous behavior, the insurrectionist behavior on January 6th, that was the smokescreen. As an old magician years ago, as a kid, it's the art of misdirection. If you don't want them to see how you're doing the trick with the left hand, you've got to do flourishes and waving of the wand and stuff with the right hand. And everybody's attention was focused on the madness, and rightfully so.
Sure.
But there was other more insidious shit, if that such a thing is possible, going on with these fucking Republicans.
Sure. And in the case of Jim Jacket Off Jordan, it's cute that his office said, well, yeah, I mean, he sent the email. Oh, he definitely sent that email. But he didn't write it with his own little brain. It was from a former Pentagon IG named Joseph Schmitz. Now there's nothing in the text message to say, you know, this is what Joseph Schmitz sent to me or anything like that. But they did say, Mr. Meadows definitely knew that it wasn't Jim Jacket Off Jordan's work. So I guess there's some mind reading going on there, but that makes things worse. So there was a coup being planned by a guy who used to work for the Pentagon as an inspector general. That's reassuring.
There were people in the Pentagon. I think this was covered some months ago. And actually they wanted, I forget which Defense Department position it was, but Trump wanted to load that position with, who was it? Who was that crazy? Well, I got to narrow it down.
Yeah, I was going to say that's crazy buggers.
The brother of the guy that got pardoned, which is Trump's buddy, who used to be a general or something.
You're talking about Michael Flynn and Michael Flynn's brother.
Yeah, they were stacking wherever they could stack to have operatives in place to make a real go of it. And unfortunately, or fortunately for us, they're such an inept crew. It's like that Jimmy Breslin book, The Gang who couldn't shoot straight.
Right, yeah.
You know, thank God for their ineptitude, you know, because they could have pulled this off.
Yeah, if they were competent, they could have. There's no telling the horror they could have unleashed.
Yeah, but what does the Bible say? Something like beware your sins will find you out or something like that.
Yeah.
All will become known over time if we're fortunate. And the January 6th committee is on the right track. And you know, when you got Mitch McConnell, did you hear that statement that he made? He's watching it carefully. If you got Mitch McConnell looking like a deer caught in the headlights and doesn't know whether to shit or wind his watch, you know that they're being gotten to by these proceedings. That's why he didn't want the independent committee or commission to be formulated, because he knew that this shit was going to come out. And it's coming out. And what did H.R. Haldeman or Bob Ehrlichman say? You know, once the toothpaste is out of the tube, it's damn near impossible to get it back in.
And what did they say? What did every Republican under the sun say during the great cleanest hunt of the late 90s? Drip, drip, drip.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's in the nature of these reprobates. It's in their very nature, their DNA, their bones, their marrow, to be, first of all, inept, but second of all, to be found out. I mean, you know, I'm old enough to remember Watergate. who got away with anything with Watergate? There were some fucking prison sentences. Now, they weren't.
H.R. Haldeman did 18 months.
Yeah. You can look at the list of all the people that went to jail, you know, due to Watergate. And we've changed, but we haven't changed that goddamn much.
No, the changes are largely procedural, and that's why it's proving so difficult to. They're even with the Saturday Night Massacre, there was a means of getting to these people, and that's what's proving so goddamn difficult, because they learned a lesson, Scott. I mean, they're not complete idiots. So now they're at a place where they, well, yeah, I'm just not going to show up. And they're convinced that the House will the House will turn to Republican hands, and then the January 6th Commission will be no more, and the criminal prosecutions will disappear, and even if they don't, it'll go to the Supreme Court, and the crooks up there will just say no harm, no foul.
But here's the deal: that's what they would like to have happen. They're like little children in that regard. You know, that Santa Claus is going to put everything from the catalog under the tree come Christmas morning. Well, how many times have you gotten everything that you wanted for Christmas? You know, I know I never...
Still waiting on the fucking pony.
Yeah, well, there's evidence a pony's been here, you know.
It's right, yeah.
Be careful where you step. But you get my meaning. They're speaking as if we... the rest of us have nothing at all to do with what's going to happen in 2022. I made a rhyme. I'm a poet and I don't know it. You know how I know?
Because of your feet. They're Longfellows.
That's right. Thank you, God damn you.
Dear God, he'll be here all week.
It's as if we have never missed a step, you see. And the people are saying they're on their feet, leaving. But anyway,
well, you'll love this. I mean, I've got to wrap things up here in a minute, just because my ability to get through 3 hours of radio is still somewhat suspect insofar as the sitting down for a very long time is a rather painful process.
I can imagine.
I mean, it's amazing. It's amazing. Just when you think in terms of human evolution, Scott, there are not a lot of sitting animals that sit like we sit, because of course we're bipedal. And we don't knuckle walk. I had a neurosurgeon one time who had an intern shadowing him, and I was actually my appointment, and we were talking about my bad neck, and he looked at the intern and said, "Do you know why gorillas don't have lumbar back problems?" I raised my little hand. I said, "Ooh, Mr. Cotter. And the intern had this, "What?" You know, cow look at a new gate look on his face. And I said, "Because they're not fully bipedal and they don't walk all upright all the time and they knuckle walk." And he said, "Ooh, gold star for you."
Is that the answer? Because I don't know.
Yeah, it is. It is the answer. Because it's bipedalism that causes all the pressure on the spine that leads to various and sundry degradatory processes over the course of just being alive. But you're going to get a big kick out of this. We live.
Wait, you know who else was a knuckle dragger?
Who's that?
My great uncle was a retired taffy puller back before they had machines to do that. And that poor bastard.
Oh, he was not. You quit that.
He had to wear special gloves so his knuckles wouldn't get all scuffed up. Anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, we've had it. There's an Alex Jones sighting, and in the wake of the horrible tornadoes that ravaged the central part of the country in the southeast, Alex Jones has now declared. So the question is, did they use the weather weapons to cause the tornadoes? That's a legitimate question to ask.
No, come on. That's not true. That can't be true, Robin.
Mm-hmm. Yep, right.
I thought he was going to say the tornadoes were actors.
Oh, crisis! Crisis tornadoes?
Yeah, I got your crisis tornadoes right here.
Jesus. Hey, we did that together. Scott, it's so good to hear from you, my friend.
It's good to be heard from, and I promise not to be so out of touch.
Well, we worry.
My mulling is pretty much over. I've got it all figured out. I knew the answer all along. It's like Mr. Natural in the comics used to say. What does it mean, Mr. Natural? Mr. Natural say, it don't mean sheet.
There we go. It don't all mean right, sheet. Well, listen, maybe pop by for Friday on the front porch. That'd be lovely.
I may or may not be able to because the AT&T person is going to come here and hook me up with a higher speed via fiber.
Ooh, very nice. Optics. Very nice.
And he's supposed to be here between, well, you know how they are, between 8 and noon or between noon and 4.
Oh, I know. We've got somebody showing up between 9 and 5 on Friday.
But he's supposed to take once he's here, it's going to take 4 hours. So if he gets here early enough and gets through quick enough, I may very well be high speeding my rancid ass into the front porch.
Thanks for adding the rancid part. That's what makes it art, the rancid part.
Well, I've got to give you something to go for and to hope for. I mean, you know, it wouldn't be me if I didn't, you know?
And there's an amen coming in here. Our dear sister Jude said it's good to hear from Scott along with Tracy yesterday and a great guest today also. So you are appreciated.
Well, I appreciate the appreciation.
Yes, of course I like to talk to you, Dimitri. Of course I like to just say hello.
I only heard a snippet yesterday because I had something going on, but I heard talk of juju bees and red vines, and then I had to stop.
I understand. All right, Scott, have a good night, my friend.
All right, Robin, take care, and my best to the Horn family. For those of you who are betting I was dead and would never be heard from again, you lose.
Pay the bookie,
as Warner Wolf used to say. If you had Scott's dead and pushing out daisies, you lost.
Take it easy, Scott.
All right, see ya.
Bye now. This has been a heck of a good conversational evening. Made it 2 hours, yay! And thanks so much to Troy Miller for joining me. It's great to hear from Scott. Thanks to Steve from Georgistan jumping in on Chris's continuing Fuck Joe Manchin challenge, and thanks as well to Jeremy in Vermont jumping in on that. So we are $165 away from meeting that challenge, which would go a long way toward wiping out, you know, this past Thursday and a piece of this past Friday. Really need to catch up with fundraising for the month of December. I know, holiday month, it's always tough. I know. But any help is good help as we get ready to leave out of here. Thank you to each and every one of you, Patreon, PayPal subscribers, a la carte contributors, United States Postal Service contributors. Thank you so much. Thank you to our Venmo contributors. Thanks as well there. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Pinch Hit Midweek Chat Room Utility Moderator and all-around great guy, Steve from Georgistan, Brother Bishop Steve, thank you so much. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20-plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. Go by CRMW.net sometimes. And just check it out and see what's going on. Follow them on Facebook, that kind of thing. There's a lot of good work being done. A lot of good work. And, of course, now would be a great time to reach out to your member of the House of Representatives and ask them to pretty please co-sponsor the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, H.R. 2073. It means the world and the future to Appalachia. Really does. please stay safe. Get your vaccine. Get your booster. Especially in light of the fact that over on Fox now, they're saying that the virus is vanishing, and that this is not a joke. They actually had a expert doctor who showed up on Fox and said, you know, it's time to let this relatively harmless virus just run its course through the country. 800,000 dead Americans, fully 1% of the 65 and older population of this country. And that horrible, horrible, horrible human being has the nerve to say this relatively mild virus. God damn her. So wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Use your hand sanitizer. Take it everywhere with you. Pocket, purse, backpack, European-style messenger bag. Don't care. Have some with you. Use it frequently. Wear your mask. Maintain your social distance. And for God's sakes, if somebody comes toward you saying, well, you know, I just don't know if we can stand the inflation, avoid that person like the plague. Because he is. And always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you. Later.